Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Curtis Milan. Curtis, how's it going, man?
Not too bad, yes, sir. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, and I'm really looking forward to this one. As I mentioned off here, and I'm just passionate about coaching, coach development, but just really getting to connect with other coaches and just really learn about what everyone's doing out there. So maybe before we get into the thick of it, a brief insight around who you are and what you do, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, firstly, really appreciate you inviting me on. I've been following your podcast for a little while. You've had some great guests. So yeah, really excited to chat with you today. And like we said before, just the opportunity to talk football and no holds barred, keep the information coming for us all. So yeah, my role is I'm an individual development coach based in Sweden with an Allsvenskan club called Hammarby. I've been there now, this would be 2 years, but my journey has been pretty unique in that I've had opportunities. I've been very, very lucky to coach in Ireland, to coach in America. After graduating university in Essex, I moved to Northern Ireland, where my family is from, where I was born. And at the time, I was working in a call center for 6 years, call center and a bank. And then at the age of 28, a real freak situation happened. I received a phone call from a friend of a friend who just asked me if I wanted to get involved more in coaching. I was doing little bits and bobs for the local village team, and I had a fantastic opportunity to go to Boston originally for 2 months. After 2 months, I got given a longer term contract and stayed there for 4 years, met my now wife, who's from California, went to California for 6 years, staying with the same organization, and then ended up there for 10 years and decided I wanted to change and get back into European football, and really just reached out on LinkedIn, put a few emails together, put my name out there, spent a bit of time putting a profile together. And like I said, I think a lot of what has happened to me has been luck, but I think a big appreciation on that you have to put your name out there somewhere. And yeah, circumstances and luck has been a big player in where I am now and the opportunities I've had to date.
Listen, Curtis, thank you for sharing that, first of all. And I think, you know, just to touch on this, so much in there that we can kind of, you know, touch on and unpack. I want to start by, you know, just that last piece that you've talked there. You mentioned a couple of times this about luck. I'm not sure necessarily that I would agree, because it seems like you've been proactive and you put in a lot of effort to try and make those connections and build those relationships to actually get yourself out there and get you the opportunities that you're given. So fortunate maybe, appreciative maybe, gratitude is probably what I'm hearing from you, but I'm not sure how much luck. And the reason I say that is because there'll be people listening to this now thinking, oh, well, I'm just unlucky then. But I think in reality, there's probably been a lot of work behind the scenes, you know, even if it is as little as, like you said, reaching out to people on LinkedIn and building that profile for yourself. Let's just start there before we kind of, you know,
wind back and go through your journey as a whole. Just talk to us about how important that piece is and what are some maybe top tips that you can think about giving coaches that might actually help. Because let's be honest, especially in England, you know, the competition is getting even more fierce, and I'm sure it is around the world as well. But just within the country as well, just in terms of the amount of coaches that are becoming qualified and have ambitions of working in the game, and we're seeing a large influx of more coaches at younger ages now as well. So it's become a very, very competitive market. One that's also seen many coaches leave the quote-unquote professional and elite game. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you make a really good point in regards to, when I say luck, I mean timing. And you are going to put, when I moved from Los Angeles to Stockholm, not specifically just Stockholm, but reaching out to clubs in Sweden, I probably reached out to 9, 10, maybe 11 clubs. But it was a case of putting my football mind together on paper as best as I can. So once myself and my wife decided we were going to make the jump and see what happens, I made the conscious decision to put together a coaching profile. So it was 12 pages. It wasn't waffle. It wasn't the buzzwords that everybody, we all see day to day in the football world. But it was true to me. It spoke about what I believe in, how we do it, why we do it, which I think is the most important thing, why. And it, obviously, you put in a few testimonies from former players and coaches you work with to back you up a little bit. But I spent a lot of time now. I probably spent 3 months putting that together. And then it was a case of, okay, like you said, network. Can you get out there? Do you have the personality to actually just sit down and talk to somebody and say, hey, like, you don't have to offer your services, but hey, what are you guys doing? What can I take from that? Okay, if you don't have anything right now, what would it take for me or for anybody to have an opportunity with an organization like yourself? So that's been really, when I say, so I'm glad you picked me up on that. When I say luck, it's not about sitting around in your bedroom and hoping somebody comes knocking at your door because they saw a session you did with an under 12 group 2 months ago. It is about being out there. But a big part for me is, like you said, there's so many people, so many qualified people, 10 times better than I am as a coach, who apply for positions. But something has to click. Something has to be there at the right time, at the right place. So I got very, when I say luck, I got very fortunate that three clubs in Stockholm came back to me and wanted to sit down and talk. And I ended up at Hammarby really because of our head of the Boys Academy. His first meeting with me was a Zoom call, and we sat down for 2 hours and we just spoke. And we probably spoke about football for 20 minutes. And then after that, he invited me to come over from LA. I sat down again with him for another 2 hours, and then I went back to LA, and then we sat down again. It was just about realizing that we are people. Like, we all want the same thing, I hope, is to help players who we're fortunate enough to work with. But it really was that, and something that I'll touch on a little bit and always, is relationships. The most important thing is knowledge of people, not knowledge of football. And that has resonated with me probably for the last 15 years. You're on mute, pal. Sorry.
Okay. That's you know, there's so many little insights, and I just want to touch on a couple of things there. But, you know, you talked there about, you know, having that opportunity, not just to meet, but then it not even being about football, it's just about you as the individual, right? And you just building that relationship and just having that human connection. So just talk to that a little bit, because there's going to be people, like I said, listening to this thinking, yeah, but how easy is it to do that? Because for a lot of people, they probably go in thinking, oh, it is about the football. So I'm going to show how much you know about the football rather than actually just show how much I could probably fit into the environment and be part of what they're building, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there's a big part of that we all want to show how good we are, right? Football is one of the most demanding sporting environments and critical environments. You get critiqued based on one session. Everyone has a bad day at work, but you could do one 90-minute session and someone could watch it and think you're the worst coach in the world. So we are always challenging and pushing ourselves to be better and to be good. I think the big thing for me was that realizing that looking at development the other way around. Don't look at it as what I am giving. Look at it from the player perspective. So look at it from the learner. What do they need? Firstly, they need connection, right? Connection before correction, always. Because you can know everything about football, but if you don't know how that person, that player, learns, then what you know doesn't mean anything, or means very little. And there's a famous Johan Cruyff quote. I mean, if in doubt, always quote Johan Cruyff, right? And you can't go wrong. Where he says, teams don't learn, individuals in the team learn. Development is a personal process, even when conducted in a team environment. So it's about the individuals. And I've been very fortunate in my role as an individual development coach to really hone in on that. And the fact that everything we do, and you could talk from grassroots through to Premier League, everything we do is about relationships. From the directors to the coach, from the coach to his assistant coach, from the assistant coach to the catering staff, from the coach to the players to the players, the players to the fans. Everything is relationships. So, and I've not been on a coaching course that has taught us about relationships.
It's actually really interesting point, because you spot on, you know, that connection before correction piece. And I was having a conversation just today about this with a couple of coaches, and they're saying that you have to have that connection to have that relationship, because in essence, it almost gives you the credibility and gives you the buy-in to actually then critique. Because if you build that relationship, you build that connection, person on the receiving end knows it's coming from a good place, and it's coming from a place of care, and actually the fact that you're trying to, you know, you've got the best of intentions with it. So they then become more open to the idea of, actually, I'm going to receive that feedback. I'm going to receive that critique. Even if I don't like it, I know that he cares about me or she cares about me, to the point where actually they're doing it for my best interest, which I think is, you know, so important. And you're right. I don't think we talk enough about it on coaching courses around, you know, the importance of developing relationships. We talk about the idea that actually relationships are important. We talk about the idea that we want to make it player-centered. We talk about the idea that we want to meet the players' needs and meet them where they're at. But actually, none of that matters if we don't know how to build the relationship in the first place, right? And I think it's also important, and I use the analogy all the time, that it's like having a key to a lock. Me and you work together as an example. I have to accept that I'm not going to have a key for every lock, the lock being the players. Like, you're going to be able to build relationships better than I will with some players, and vice versa. And that's okay. But I think this is where it comes back to the coach also being able to relinquish some of the responsibility to say, hey, I'm not gonna be able to affect every single player every single time. So what can I do with the colleagues around me? What can I do with my peers to make sure that everyone's getting a piece of the action, if you like?
100%. And the great thing we have is, we know when we go to work, we have something that we're 99% of the time, we're all passionate about, right? Football is the entry ticket. So as soon as you get that, you have something, obviously you can talk about, like, I worked in a bank in a call center for 6 years. The person next to me didn't have the same passion as I did, didn't care about the same things I cared about. But I go to work every day knowing that everybody cares about football and should care about development. So then what happens is, once football knowledge is the entry ticket, then what we have is emotional connection. And anybody who's been involved in football will see that good emotional connection equates to typically confidence, and everybody can see the difference in a confident player to an unconfident or non-confident player.
I think you're spot on. Okay, so let's just come back to your journey a little bit then. You mentioned, obviously, yeah, your current role is working as an individual development coach for Hammarby. I want to take you back before that. You said you had a friend of a friend who reached out and basically said, do you want to get involved a little bit more in this coaching stuff? What are you thinking? What's your mindset at the time? And, you know, just tell me a little bit about the context of what you're stepping into at that point.
So it's really what I think football shows us, and I'm sure other people can speak to their journeys, but football has an incredible, unpredictable beauty about it at times. So I was working in a call center. I came over to Northern Ireland to play a little bit. not anywhere good enough to make a living out of it, but to earn a little bit of money and play. And then I broke my leg at 24, stopped, carried on, did a little bit of coaching, like a little bit, helped out the local village team, like I said. But the coach I worked with, I was playing for, he had an extensive network, like one of the best coaches to this day I've ever worked with. And at 37, he had a pro license, but his greatest strength, and even today, I had lunch with him today, is his connection. How he knows more about football than, like, he's forgot more about football than I'll ever learn, to be honest with you. But he has this incredible ability. And that was something I was very fortunate to learn early on. So his friend had connections in America and they were looking for coaches. And he called me. It was actually my 28th birthday. And it was a, like when I say an unpredictable beauty about football and life. One of the first things he said to me, and this was 12 years ago, why are you not at work? And I said, well, like, it's my birthday today. And he said, oh, well, then you may remember this phone call for the rest of your life. And I said, okay, right. Well, and he ended up inviting me, as I say, to go to America for 2 months. And my life changed from that point. I went into the bank, gave them my resignation, took a risk on going to America. I've never been to America. And like I said, the organization I was with offered me a long-term contract or a couple of years. I stayed there for 4 years. And during that time, I met my girlfriend, now wife. And she's from California. And again, circumstances and timing. At the time, the organization was looking to expand, to make a franchise on the West Coast. And 2 weeks earlier, I had had a conversation about wanting to do more. I want to be more involved. My girlfriend is from California. And again, timing. The boss just said to me, well, we're looking for a general manager to go out to California and help this expansion franchise. And I took it. I just went. circumstances. But being around the table, I think, is so important. A lot of coaches, you made a point earlier about coaches just feeling unlucky. We're always unlucky as well. We always have moments that it never lines up how you think it is. Otherwise, I'd be coaching Barcelona this weekend. Like, but it's how you take in those moments, but you still have to be around the table.
I think it's a great point. And, I love the humility and how it's always about timing. And it's still referring back to that piece of luck, if you like, right? I love it. But in actual fact, actually, it might have just been the energy you're putting out there, right? Bringing that back and, the stars aligning for you in that respect. It might seem like it's luck, but actually, certain things have just happened the way they have. You could, no one ever writes a story for us. It's probably already written in some ways. I guess in that, it's recognizing that the opportunity was there, and sometimes it doesn't come in the way that we plan. But sometimes, it can be a blessing in disguise in that respect. And I think that's where some coaches need to just take that risk. And I think that's the real key thing I've taken from what you just said there. Like, you're willing to risk it, because you knew this is what you wanted. And I think that's something I see with a lot of coaches now that maybe isn't as frequent and as common as maybe it once was. I mean, I'm not sure how old you are. I'm 34, and I remember when I started coaching back when I was 18, it was never about having a career in the game. It was just about, I love football and I wanted to be around it. And I wasn't playing much anymore. So let's get in coaching. And I guess the number one kind of driver for me at the time was I just wanted to be a better coach. And eventually what happened over time, then you start thinking, oh, actually, I could probably do something with this. Then I moved into this, then I moved into that, and then I went into academy football and so on and so forth. But it seems like coaches now, right from the beginning of their journeys, they're already thinking about academy football, elite football, and working at the top level. And I think it almost robs them of the experiences that might help them become more well-rounded and, almost ground them a little bit, step into those environments with a bit more confidence and a bit more, I guess, readiness, if you like, because by the sounds of it, it seems like you felt at those times when you took those jumps and those risks, you were probably ready for it, not knowing what was going to happen. So there's an element of uncertainty, but you felt prepared and ready to go into those situations. Would that be a fair observation?
Yeah, 100%. But I think that we also, for us to grow, we need to, even when we're talking about players, for anybody to grow, you have to be challenged. So you have to be prepared. And I know there's a lot of cliches and a lot of quotes you can throw around now about be prepared to fall and et cetera, et cetera. But you do have to be prepared to fail. Like, because, again, we're talking about, I don't want to use the word luck, but fortunate that I had very, very supportive wife, very supportive background that allowed me. But I always came back to the fact that if I failed, worst case scenario is I'm probably going to go back to the call center. Like, and no disrespect, right? But like, that's where I was. That was my life. So if I failed, then yeah, you do. I mean, has anybody been successful when it's been a given? Like, you have to take risks, and of course, calculated risks. If somebody said to me today, here's a job in the middle of nowhere, but in 5 years' time, you could be earning this amount of money and having this amount of impact on players, you weigh up everything, right? So they are calculated risks as well.
100%. So let's talk about that. Obviously, you've made that jump. You've gone over to California. Fast forward, you're now reaching out. You're sitting down with this academy manager from Hammarby in Sweden. Why Sweden? What was it about that, and how did that end up leaving you in the role that you're in now?
Yeah, really good question. I mean, some people still ask me now, and I don't know the answer to that. Why Sweden? It was originally Spain. A lot harder climate to get into in the football world. I was learning Spanish. My wife is fluent in Spanish, being from Southern California. And then I realized I'm not clever enough to develop my football knowledge and learn a new language like that. And then a long time ago, I made a visit to Sweden. It was a two-week journey where I was working, just coaching German kids. It was a small opportunity I had, and I came over for 2 weeks to Sweden and coached and loved it. Loved the people. Loved the humility, loved the laid-back environment. And the great thing about Sweden is everyone speaks English. So after about 2 years of convincing my wife to go, she finally made the jump. I was lucky that she wanted to make a challenge of everything. And then ended up Sweden. So as I said earlier, I reached out to 8, 9, 10 clubs. Fortunately, three of them come back. I always knew I wanted to be in Stockholm. Sat down with those clubs, and basically, like I said, the conversation was just about like human values. And what was amazing to me was that how open Hammarby are. So Hammarby is, we just, unfortunately, too open. We just lost our head coach in Middlesbrough this week. But when you talk about young coaches earlier, yes, he's 37. He's 37 and he's just got a job at Middlesbrough. So when I think about, okay, am I too late behind? No, because that's not my journey right now. I don't want to be going that way. My journey, I'm very happy with each stage, each step I'm making and moving forward. And Hammarby has been a really, really good club for that. Great people. In Stockholm, they're known as the Working Man's Club. But we get the most fans, 30,000 every week at home games. Very, very passionate. So that's been really good, and learning the culture, obviously being open-minded for the culture as well, because very different to Los Angeles, let's say.
But do you know what, again, even in there, there's some real key messages that you've kind of shared there. And I think the first thing that kind of really jumps up is we're all on our own journey. Like, if you told me 16 years ago when I started coaching, oh, by the way, you're going to go into coach development and that's going to be your thing, I would be like, what are you talking about? I love coaching. Do you know what I mean? I just want to coach, right? Yeah. But obviously, you know, things happen along the way. You start picking up different interests, different passions or whatever. And obviously, everyone's journey is different. And it's never really laid out in the way that, well, it's never really follows the route that you laid it out in. But then even now, you're talking there about the importance of it being your own journey. We shouldn't also then compare to others, because we don't know what that experience is going to be like for them. We don't know what it's not going to be like. We don't know what they've had to do to get there. We don't know what they've had to, you know, sacrifice for doing that as well. So I think it's also recognizing, and, you know, we're talking about quotes earlier. Like, my wife has got a great one, and she always says, but, you know, if you ever see something you want, be willing to take the good and the bad of it.
That's a great quote.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's ultimately like, it's never going to be perfect. There's always going to be something that you're going to have to lose in something whenever you gain.
The big thing for me on that, just before, is that we always have to come back to the why. Like, if you get involved in coaching because you want to coach Premier League, that's your why. You neglect, that's not a problem. That's fine. Absolutely happy if that's your why. But you neglect all of the steps it takes to get there.
Yes.
Because my why is impact. How much, and it's a word, and anybody asks me what is the number one human trait, it's humility, right? You have to have humility. But you also have to understand that you are having an impact on players and people. And if you wake up every day and say, okay, I want to, my role is to help players. And I'm blessed that I have that opportunity every day to help 16, 17, 18, 19 year olds to make that step to professional football. That's what you have to come back to, the why. And I know a lot of people in our world, as the development world, have seen Simon Sinek, The Golden Circle, I think it's called, The Why, is this big sell piece. If you haven't listened to that or watched that on YouTube, definitely get onto that, because that was a real eye-opener for me.
It's a great point. I was, funny enough, I was actually talking about that same thing a couple of days ago when I was lecturing at on a degree program. But I want to come back to your role. You said there about knowing your why. You put in your role, you're working with 16, 17, 18, 19 year olds, helping them to hopefully develop to the first team environment. And I say this about all the time, whether it's coach development, whether it's coaching. Ultimately, this, and I think you touched on it earlier as well, right? And that effectively, it's about people development. This just happens to be the vehicle that we're using to do that work, if you like, and serve that purpose in the world, if you like. So I guess let's talk about that, because you're seeing maybe not too new, but it's still relatively new in terms of probably the last decade or so, where you're starting to see an emergence of more individual development coaches and specialists picking up that role, if you like, across different environments. So just talk to us a little bit around, was that a role that was there ready for you? Was that a role that they already had and they were looking for you to fill it in? Or was that something that you pitched to them? Because I'm keen to kind of, one, explore that, but also then see, right, what does that look like from your perspective? Because obviously we've got these roles all over the place. It looks very different in different environments. And I'll be honest with you, in some environments have got them. I don't know if they actually do what they say on the tin.
So when I first came to, which I never mentioned earlier, when I first came to Hammarby, I was on a part-time contract. So that was a risk for me as well, to go into from full-time LA salary, where you're talking six figures, to a part-time contract in Sweden. So that was part of a risk. And then after 5 months, it was a 12-month contract. After 5 months, they came to me, said, we want to make you full-time, starting immediately. And we want to work towards this new role, because I came in originally as an assistant coach. And it wasn't a role that was already there. They created it. I'm not saying they created it for me, but they created it at that time that I was there. So it was really a blank canvas. But obviously, as we know in football, everyone has ideas, right? Which is great. Everyone has opinions. Everyone has ideas. It's about finding how we can make it work and have the greatest impact. You make a really good point there about, like, does it really work? Like, I mean, when you look at it, academies across Europe, let's say, are all predominantly doing the same things, right? No one has a magic potion that no one else knows about. Everyone's doing the same things. Obviously, resources are a big factor. The bigger clubs have more resources, more people they can put to it. But it's about how well and consistent you're executing those things. Like, we're doing things, let's be honest, we're doing things that Arsenal are doing, but they have way more resources, they're way more consistent, and they're just doing it better than us, right? And that's what it comes down to. So there isn't a magic potion. It's about finding what works in your environment as well.
Just on that though, you know, and I completely understand the point, and the question I would ask, and I'll challenge it back, is that an assumption that Arsenal, I'm not saying Arsenal aren't, by the way, but is that an assumption that Arsenal are doing it better? And isn't that a trap that some people often fall into, just assuming that because their club is bigger and has a maybe bigger reputation, that they must be doing things at a better level? Because it's a debate that I've had with people recently over the last couple of years, really, that what is elite? Right, is elite the environment you work in? Is it the behaviors that are being exhibited? Is it the level of the player that they're trying to produce? Because you know, again, I remember having a conversation with someone one time, and I had the opportunity to go and observe the England national youth teams, or one of the many opportunities I've had to go and observe them. And I actually questioned it beforehand. I said, "No, right, this person's asked me to come with them to observe it." Not being difficult, not being. What do you want me to? Like, why do you want me to come? Like, what are you hoping that I'm going to observe and see in that environment? And I challenged them, and I said, I want you to tell me what you think I'm going to get. Not because I'm trying to be difficult, but tell me what you think I'm going to get by observing that environment without using the word elite. And they couldn't answer it. Now, again, not to be difficult, but my point was, is that, yeah, cool, it might be England, it might be whatever level, but you can't tell me that, just coming back to your point, and you just said it here yourself, like, what they're doing over there, you can't tell me they're not doing it at the Arsenal, you can't tell me they're not doing it at Chelsea, they can't tell me they're not doing it at wherever else we could go and observe. So what are we really talking about here when we're talking about elite? Because I'm sure you'll agree with this, just because it's an elite environment doesn't mean there's elite things going on in it all the time. And just because it's something that's quote unquote not an elite environment doesn't mean there's not elite things going on there too.
No, you're right. I mean, that's very philosophical. That was great. When we talk about, I mean, there's an assumption, obviously. It all comes down to an assumption. They're doing things, and like I said, they're not doing, like, in one of our sessions, let's take our under-19 session. We have our head coach, we have our assistant coach, we have a goalkeeping coach, we have myself within the session working. So there's four coaches, at least, minimum. Then we'll have maybe one or two other coaches that may be there, maybe our performance coach, maybe one of the younger age group coaches helping out, whatever. If we were to put our coaches and those coaches side by side, are they doing anything different? Probably not, right? Their sessions are probably still structured the same, right? They're still doing the four phases. They're still working on this. They still have a common thread throughout the session. But I think that we have to assume that they're more consistent. We have to assume that they're able to put more resources to it. Like, your point is really, really valid. Is it elite based on that one session, or does elite mean over the course of the year they're able to maintain a higher level? Like, we drop, like, let's be honest, throughout the year, especially when it gets to January, February, and it gets to minus 15 degrees in Stockholm, sometimes the sessions drop off a little bit. I would like to think elite is you are pushing that level every single week, every single session, every single activity. That's where I would say elite is consistently doing it.
Yeah. Oh, and I completely agree with you on that. But again, it goes back to the question, right, in terms of the recognition and, I guess, the assumptions that comes with, just because it is a bigger, you know, more reputable environment, that's where elite exists and they can't exist outside that, which is what a lot of people think. And I say to people all the time, because the question I've started challenging a lot of coaches with, and again, more because I like to be provocative sometimes, is how do you know what you're doing is working? Like, really, if we're all doing the same thing, how do you know what you're doing is working? Because, I don't know, let's just, for argument's sake, we woke up tomorrow and they said that no more coaches, still have players playing in the Premier League. And people coming through year after year. So how do we know that what we're doing is really working?
Yeah, you're trying to quantify it, right? And how you can quantify development? We all know it's not linear. So how do you quantify an opinion based sport? Because that's what it is. It's 100%. Strictly opinion based, because you can go from the top to the bottom, but everything comes down to what is the person who's making the decision, their opinion.
Well, this is it, right? And I think at the end of the day, like, and I say to coaches again, just because I like to provoke thought, are we limited by the player's capacity to learn, or are we limited by our ability to teach? Right? Because I think there's some coaches out there, they will cap a player, put a ceiling on a player because whatever that player needs is beyond their knowledge, if that makes sense. But it's also being humble enough to actually say, do you know what? I don't know how to help that player. Whereas majority of coaches will discard that player and say that player's got no potential. Or maybe you're not good enough to get it out of them. I don't know. But again, it's just the challenge of thinking, right? In terms of how much work are we doing as coaches and individuals. And again, this isn't directing at any particular individual, but it's just more just a stretch and challenge the thinking of all coaches to suggest that actually, are we really doing as much as we can? Or are we just doing as much as we feel comfortable to do, if that makes sense?
I think that comes back to the why again. Like we're talking about, we don't get to choose who comes onto the pitch. Mm. Like our job is, why we're there is to help who comes onto the pitch. And if they are, let's just say they're very temperamental, right? Let's just say we've got a 17-year-old who's very temperamental. I don't want to say bad attitude, but doesn't really do everything we want them to do, right?
That's sure, a challenge. You're thinking of someone.
I am actually. I didn't want to give away too much there, but so if we have a player who comes onto the pitch who has all the talent in the world, we've all seen this. Players who are above the level we're coaching, right? But managing them mentally, their mental well-being and their mental focus and their ability to apply throughout an entire session for an entire week, for an entire weekend or game at the weekend, that becomes really challenging for us. Mm. As coaches, I've seen coaches not play a player because he's tough, or I've seen coaches not take a player who is definitely going to improve their team because they've had a bad experience with him.
Mm.
And that is really interesting to me because I think we have to be adaptable. Yes, we have to have our values and we have to have our boundaries. And yes, we have to say this is the structure in our environment. But we also have to accept that we're dealing with people. And there is a director once said to me,
many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers. But that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We don't work with footballers. We work with people who play football. And it's like, when you start thinking about it like that, they're just people. Like, okay, the challenge isn't me trying to get that temperamental player to be focused and to work for the entire 90 minutes of a training session. My job is try to improve them 2% every week. 2%. Just work on 2%. That's it. I mean, then see what happens. Some weeks you might get 5%. But if you start getting the trust from the player, that snowball effect is going to keep going and keep going and keep going. So we can't turn, and obviously we're in a different environment than Arsenal first team, right? Arteta is a bit different. If he has a temperamental player, he gets rid of them, right? We know that. But for us, we don't do that. Our job is to develop players. And again, to talk about buzzwords, the buzzword, as we all know in football, is holistic, right? Talking about holistic. But it's so true. We're there to work with people who play football. That's it.
I think it's a great point. And I think one of the things that just jumped into my mind as you were speaking is that reality is it might not even look like we've developed 2%, because like you said, you know, it's non-linear, right? And ultimately that 2% might not pay its dividends until 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks down the line.
Yeah.
And it might have to take, you know, some unlearning to get the learning in. And I think that piece is also really important. So I guess, you know, it kind of just further highlights the piece around coaches being able to be really good and really detailed with their observations and how well they notice things, and whether that's just, you know, going back to your buzzword about holistic, and you know, whether that's a technical thing, whether that's a psychological thing, just knowing the individual that you're working with, because like you're right, you hit the nail on the head. We are working with people who just happen to be playing football. And if we weren't football coaches, it would be something else, right? It would be, you know, in a call center working with customers that happen to be people, right? So I think, you know, if you look at it through that lens, but, you know, let's come back to your role a little bit then, you know, talk to me about what does that look like on a day to day, and, you know, what's your approach to that, and how would you define to someone the role of an individual development coach without stating the obvious?
Yeah, I mean, I've thought about this quite a lot, because it was, like I said at the start, quite a blank page and how we want to do it. So our role is, as a coach in general, is to make football more complex, but to simplify it as well. And quite simply, my role is, right, bridging team development and individual progression. So going back to that Cruyff quote about teams don't learn, individuals in the team learn, right? So we're talking about, we're trying to improve the team defending low or defending higher. We have to look at the individuals within that, right? Make it a little bit more complex that way. So my role in Sweden, we work with under 17s, under 19s, and then the next step is senior football. My role is really working with the players that are transitioning from that, obviously, that youth football, right, to the professional environment. So going back to that holistic part, we are obviously looking at their off-pitch work as well, and creating that environment with habits, with values, with life choices, etc. But my job is really to contextualize their development within the demands of the club game model, but also the realities of senior football. So we have a very specific style of play. We work on it in our academy. I don't know if that's going to change based on a new head coach coming in the next month or so. But we have a very specific way. And because we believe, for example, we defend man-to-man. We defend 4-4-2 man-to-man from under 14s right through to under 19s. Every player knows what their role is. We all try to play the same way in build-up, certain roles being specific in each phase. But for me, it's trying to contextualize that and having players understand what their role is and getting the best out of them. And something I mentioned earlier about a player with confidence. How many times in football have we heard he's lacking confidence? He's a great player when he's confident. He's just lacking a bit of confidence. If I can get that out of them, I can have a bigger impact, talking with humility, but also talking about my role and having to believe that I'm making an impact. I can get more out of a player with confidence by working with them closer 1v1 for 2 or 3 weeks than a coach maybe working with a player in the session, working on defending, technical and tactical. Because the players that I'm fortunate enough to work with, a lot of them are Sweden international players. They know the game. Sometimes you don't have to correct them. One of the biggest tools I have right now is working within the session as an individual coach. I'm usually on the pitch with an iPad just for visual, so I can show the players as quick as possible. Here, what do you think about this? Oh, actually, yeah. Maybe I could change that. Maybe I can change that. But then sometimes after a training session or during the week, I'll sit down with the players. He's getting a lot of praise recently, and he should, rightly so. A gentleman called Michael Colville at Brentford, who's done. I got introduced to him through
psychology stuff. Yeah,
yeah, but he's not a trained psychologist. He'll tell you this himself.
Yeah.
And he's amazing. And his biggest tool is he sits on a bench and talks to the person. And I have found sitting down with the players and they remember everything. I need the iPad to remember things. They remember everything. They're like, yeah, but he was there. And I'm looking at the iPad saying, oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, what do you think? Yeah, let me look at it. Okay, maybe I could have done this. So they know the answers. Our job is, again, lots of cliches, lots of quotes you can use. This guided discovery that came about 10, 15 years ago. It's still true today. These are people who understand the game, and our job is to help them to develop themselves, because it is a player's game. It's not a coach's game.
100%. You know, it kind of really resonates with what you said there, because, you know, going back to philosophy and ideas and ways of working, like, I have a genuine belief, like, everybody has the right answers if you can ask them the right questions. Right? And the player, like you've said it a few times in different ways, like, the players know. Players aren't stupid. And 9 times out of 10, especially if you're working with younger players, if they're not giving you any answers, it's probably because they're not confident enough in the space that you've created. Right? Because my experience tells me, actually, no, all the players, they have answers. Everyone's got an opinion. Everyone's got a thought. It's just about being able to get that organic and authentic thought from them, right? In a way where they don't feel like they're under pressure or they're going to get it wrong. And it's like, you know, and I find myself time and time and time again just reiterating to whether it's coaches that I'm working with or whether I'm working with players. Listen, I'm just going to ask you, I set it out from the get-go. I'm going to ask a shitload of questions.
Yeah.
But my questions are just to help me understand what you think, what you know, and how I can help you. So I think a large part of it is how you frame that process of coaching. Have you managed the players' expectations on what being coached by you as the individual looks like and feels like? Have you checked in with them to help develop your understanding of what they expect from you, not just what they expect from you, rather than what they can expect from you, if that makes sense? And I think, you know, the other piece within that is also recognizing that there's no one right way to, you know, skin this cat. So you just got to keep going. And I've got a phrase I always say to coaches, like, if you ever get something, ever a situation doesn't go the way you want it to go, even when it's not your fault, it's your fault.
Yeah.
And if you can start adopting that mindset, because I did this for myself, like, and when, you know, when I, and I say this all the time to my, like, I had a period of time where for about 18 months, I just felt like I just went on an uphill curve of development, and I just accelerated in terms of coaching. And I think the biggest shift for me in that period of time was the fact that I just took accountability for everything.
Mm-hmm.
I just took accountability for everything. Even when I had nothing to do with me, I said, well, there's something I could have done about that. What could I have done differently? What could I have done to negate that? Even if it was blatantly not got nothing to do with me. Because what it challenged me, or I guess put my mindset into the frame of, was, how do we solve this problem? How do we solve this problem? And you just become more adaptable, more flexible, because you're constantly thinking about solutions to the problems you're facing. But the precursor to that and the prerequisite is you're recognizing what the problems are. And I think this is where sometimes coaches get it wrong. They don't spend enough time understanding what the problem is and getting to know what the problem is. They just come up with loads of solutions. And when they don't work, it's like, well, players aren't good enough. Recruitment team's not doing their job. You know, scouts don't know what they're doing.
The greatest thing, the challenge I would ask every coach is, when you work with a player, when was the last time you asked a player what do they think their strengths are? What do they think their skill set is? Because we work with the players a lot, and obviously we do player profile, we look at what their physical and their technical abilities are, etc. We do that. But like, we could be coaching a player, for example, we could be coaching a centre midfielder to try to be like Paul Scholes, to be standing there pinging the ball around. But actually, this player in their mind thinks they're more like Frankie de Jong, a ball carrier. And we're not working with them, so we have to give them the autonomy as well. We have to give them the autonomy. It's their game. It's not our game. We're there to help them. We're not here to tell them, I think you should play this way because this is how I think you should play. I want you to play this way because you believe in it. And there is many books and sayings about how bringing people to the table to make decisions, you're going to have more of a buy-in, right? They're going to be more bought in. Because going back to that part as well about connection before correction, this coach is on my side. He wants me to do this. I'm going to listen to him a little bit more.
You're spot on. And I think not just that, but you also, like, we can't take for granted that we can learn from players too. You know, just because we're the coach, like, you know, we're in a position of quote unquote leadership, doesn't mean that we can't learn from our quote unquote followers in that respect.
Do you know what I mean?
I'll
give you, just while you're on that before we move on, I'll give you a great example. I had the iPad, like I said, and one of our under 19 players, this was 12 months ago, at the end of the session, showed him a clip. He was through on goal. And in my head, I was like, why have you not lifted your head up? You have an option here. And I was like, look, what do you see here? What could you have done here? And he said, well, I should have took my touch across my body because it would have took away the defender and it would have closed the goalkeeper's, it would have made the angle bigger for the goalkeeper to save my shot. I didn't even think about that. I was thinking about, why didn't you pass to your teammate who's got an open goal? Like, yeah, he probably should have done, but he saw something else and it was great. It was amazing.
But and again, it's that's the beauty of it, right? It's in you've got two people looking at the exact same picture with completely different perceptions on it. And I always like to use the phrase sometimes with coaches when we're looking at observation and reviewing players is when we're looking at the game and when we're looking at players and observing what players do, are we looking at it through our eyes or their experience? Right? Because if we look at it through our eyes, we're going to be limited to what our experience would suggest that we should do. Well, we're not getting the full context without looking at it through their experience, right? Because in that moment, he's thinking, I'm not even bothered about passing the ball. I want to score. So, like, surely the best place to start is, well, okay, well, if you want to score, what would we have done to make that happen? Rather than changing the decision, let's evaluate the process. And I think that's, you know, going back to the piece around autonomy and ownership for the players around making decisions and getting their buy-in. Listen, I'm with you on that decision. Let's see how we can make that happen. And then we can go back to, you know, full circle to one of your earlier points as well about how making a calculated risk. Okay, well, is that outcome that you want, is that a better outcome than the one we can get over here? Let's weigh it up and let's just take our chances. Because I'm okay with you going through on goal and wanting to take a shot, but actually, if it's a blatantly obvious pass across and just to tap into the goal, we might want to think about that because it might be for the greater good of the team in this moment. But we can have that conversation, have that debate. And then going back to just observing the players and getting their thoughts on things. Like, I remember, and I'll never forget, this is one of the most, I guess, influential moments in my own coaching journey. I was working with a group of players at the time. It was a group of goalkeepers at the time. Had seven goalkeepers in the session because they were doing they're going through a bit of a recruitment phase at the time. So they had seven goalkeepers in there from all different backgrounds, all different experiences and journeys. And I just remember the session was something to do with shot stopping. It was quite a generic session around shot stopping. But I remember going into that session, I had like one specific way in which I wanted this to look, right? I was saying, I wanted to make a save and it has to look like this and whatnot. Anyways, I'm watching the session unravel, like the practices are going on. And within the first couple of minutes, they were getting success, but I just didn't feel right. Something wasn't quite right for me. And I couldn't quite pinpoint what it was straight away. But then I quickly realized, they're getting success, but not doing it how I want to see it. So then that was like a big light bulb moment because I kind of took a step back and I said, okay, cool. So if they're not doing it how I want to do it or how I expect them or want to see them do it, how are they doing it? So what actually ended up happening is I went into that session with one way of working and left with eight because they all did it very differently. They were getting their own successes, but what the questions that started emerging from was like, well, why is Curtis doing it this way? And why is John doing it that way? Why is Tyrell doing it this way? And what, like, then I start looking at the observations of their different profiles. So some are shorter, some are quicker, some are smaller, whatever the differences are. And it just started like blowing my mind with all these different considerations as to, oh, that might be why, that might be why. Well, this person hasn't had any coaching experience. This person's been coached, but he's been coached by, I don't know, a Spanish coach or whatever it might be, right? All these different factors that come into play. And I think to myself, wow, okay, cool. Maybe now, actually, from that point onwards, to be honest with you, yes, I've got some ideas on how it could look. But now, I just tell the players, well, here's your outcome.
Yeah.
Here's your outcome. Let's see what you come up with and we'll go from there.
There's a similar thing. I showed a video a few years ago. I was working in LA with coaches and doing coach development and grassroots coaches. And we spoke about the basics of football and what is the right pass and receive. And I left the floor open for 20 minutes. We were discussing. And then I showed them a video and I showed them how Messi receives the ball. And I showed them how Neymar receives the ball and how Coutinho receives the ball. And they receive it with the outside of their foot. They receive it with their sole of their foot. And you're like, why would we tell a player to, if they have success and they have the ability to do it this way, why are we telling them, no, you have to receive it the inside of your foot and you have to pass it this way? Of course, there's rights and wrongs, right? Like you don't pass the ball with your toe unless you're Ronaldinho, right? But we shouldn't be telling players how to do this. Like we show them, yes, this is a way. This is also a way. Do what is most comfortable for you.
Do you know what it is, though, Kurt, within that? It's, I think there's an obsession with coaches, and I think not in a malicious way, not in a negative way, but I think it's an ego thing. Understood. I think it's an ego thing. I think it's a thing where if I can't tell you how it should be, then I'm what am I doing here?
It's human nature. It's validation. Yeah. We all need validated. Yeah.
100%. But then, again, go back to the example you've given, and I think the analogy I always use, and I take it because I think sometimes when it comes to football, we just complicate things too much, right? So I take it away from football completely. I give him the example, right? Is right. You want to coach a specific technique. So let's think about that. If you go to work, you work all month. What are you expecting to get at the end of the month? People say, oh yeah, I'm expecting to get an income, my paycheck or whatever. Right? Yeah, cool, brilliant. Do you ever ask your employer where the money came from? Or are you just happy to see it in your account? Yes, I've worked hard and I got my money. That's it. Same thing applies. So if a player hits the ball a certain way and he makes his outcome, why do you care? He might have worked out a way, or she might have worked out a way that just works for them. And that's fine. Same, again, another example I like to use sometimes, Man City gone and spent 60-odd million on Haaland when he came in. He scores 50 goals every season. Do you think Pep gives a crap about how he scores them? Every goal counts the same way, whether he's smashed it from 30 yards or whether it's come off his left kneecap. Like, it's the same thing. So, like, you've got to start getting to a point where we can appreciate that. People are going to have their own ways of doing it. But can we agree on what the outcome is that we're going after? It's probably going to be a better place to start, in my opinion, anyway. I'm not sure what your thoughts are on that.
No, 100%. To touch on the part about validation, we all need that because we do try to make football more complex. And if we didn't, anybody could do it. So that's us trying to give ourselves validation as well. And we are also trying to challenge the norm, which is good. I mean, you could go back to the American athlete, Dick Fosbury, who did the high jump. He was the first person to jump over backwards, and like everybody was like, wow. But for so many years, I don't know how many before, everybody was jumping the same way. I believe they were jumping forwards over the bar. He decided to do something different. So we are always trying to find the most innovative, groundbreaking way. But going back to that point about, you know what? Nobody's doing anything special. There's no magic potion. We should just be letting the players play the game. And yes, as they get higher up the ladder, I won't use the word elite because I know you're passionate about that. As they get higher up the ladder, okay, there's a little bit more structure, but there still has to be freedom. Like, you hear it now so many times when we watch the Premier League. It's almost boring sometimes now. A lot of commentators are going against it. They're, like, it's so structured and we're losing. When was the last time we saw a Neymar? Like, we want to see Neymar come out and play the game and do something crazy. Right, we want that, and that's why we fell in love with the game. So the next generation of players now that are coming through, we have to give them more freedom. It's a player's game. They know the answers. Like you said earlier, the players know the answers. We just need to help them do it. And do it in a way where they have more autonomy. It's not a coach's game. And I know we think more resources means more coaches, but the coaches don't need to have a say. I mean, I think Pep has 25 coaches or something like that who work with him because he uses them the right way. But yeah, so it's a really, I mean, that's a 4-hour podcast on its own.
Yeah, 100%. But you know, it's just a really, really good point. And I think that the point that I've kind of touched on, I'm going to pick up on, sorry, is that not every coach needs to be the same. We've all got different functions. We've all got different roles, and that's okay. We can't, like, everyone's going to have a different way of doing it, but we're also going to have very different specialisms. So like when you, if you are a young coach, or even if you're not, and you're just thinking about, right, well, you know, what am I offering? What's my purpose? Where am I adding value? Well, start with your strengths. Like I say to people all the time, like, look, if you're looking at someone who's going to go into detail around all the tactics and whatnot, that's probably not for me. But actually, if you're looking at it similar to probably yourself, like, you know, working with individuals, developing, refining those finer bits of detail on the individual and, you know, holistically supporting the person behind the player, if you like, yeah, that's probably a bit more of me. I'm probably more passionate about supporting individuals than having to manage a team, so to speak.
I would go into that a little bit more and say that you would need to, for every coach, no matter what level, don't approach a session as a coach. Go into the mindset of what the learner needs, what they need. It's the same as if we were, I mean, I had this conversation 1,000 times in America with teachers. Like, you're a coach, but you're a teacher. We're just lucky we get to teach football, something we're passionate about. I don't know if every maths teacher or science teacher is passionate about their subjects. Maybe they are, but we're passionate about what we do. We're still teaching. We're just not in a classroom. So think about the learner. What do they need right now? And we then step into their world. They don't step into our world. And the reason I always come back to impact and is that where can you get the quickest impact on a human being? And it's by having the relationships with them. And I didn't mention earlier to you, yes, but why I started coming into that mindset, I actually went to a sports psychologist meeting in probably 17, 18 years ago. And there was 40 coaches in attendance. We were all sitting down. Obviously, coaches typically are former players at some level. And the psychologist or the lecturer gave us everybody 2 post-it notes. Said, on one post-it note, write down a coach you remember and why. Right, positively. A coach you remember positively and why. On the other post-it note, do the opposite. A coach you remember for negative reasons that you didn't like so much. So everybody writes down. And then at the front of the classroom, the lecturer put down technical, tactical, physical, and mental. So everybody has 2 post-it notes. So there's 80 post-it notes. When you had to go up to the board and put the post-it note, whether it was a mental, tactical, technical, or physical point, why you like that.
Yeah.
So, like, obviously, everybody's writing down some stuff about, yeah, I like this coach because they showed me respect or something like that, or they helped me become more confident. No joke, 77 of the post-it notes were on mental, good and bad. Yeah. 3 of them were on other things. So we remember coaches by a mentally positive or negative relationship we have with them.
It goes back to the old quote, right? Remember how they make you feel.
So I think 3 of them were, like, one of them was like, they taught me the rules of football or something like that, right?
Mm.
Okay, that's a tactical thing. But 77 of them were mental.
It's crazy. And I think the craziest part about that is that that's the part where a lot of coaches just probably completely neglect. Right, and I say it all the time.
So it's, like, the part you can have the biggest impact and the quickest impact.
I think it's not just that, but it's probably the door that allows you to access the room. Do you understand? Like, if you think about it, the players aren't there mentally. You ain't gonna get through to them anyway. Right, you're just gonna be cracking your head against a brick wall. Right, so you're better off just trying to make sure they're in the right space. And today, that right space might just be, do you know what? Kurt, are you all right? Yeah. Let's not get into the technical tactical. Let's just make sure you're okay. Right? And I think sometimes it is just that. And I encourage coaches to think about this, in that just because you've gone through the effort of saying, right, this is what my plan is for today, this is what my theme of today's session is going to be, and you've gone through all of this, don't think the players are going to show up and be ready for that every single time. Because those are the things that you can't control. And then you have to go back to, well, why am I doing this? Well, I'm doing this to help the players. But are the players ready to be helped? In fact, what help do the players actually need right now? Is it a technical tactical, or is it just an arm around the shoulder and say, just a check-in? Do you know what I mean? And then you've got so many different factors that come into it. And I make the point all the time, like some of the considerations that I think coaches don't even take into account. Like, what day of the week are we training? What's happening in the players' week? How much do we know about what that week looks like for the players, or even that day? Or even knowing the individual on a personal level to say, actually, I don't know, it could be anything. Like, it could be, I don't know, in your case, right, Kurt's married and he's just found out his wife might be pregnant. I don't know, anything, right? And all these different things that are playing with emotions and, like, so many individual factors that can come into it that will actually 100% have a knock-on effect in terms of how that person now approaches and engages with the training process.
And that's something you've touched on, something really important there, is that, like, that connection with a player, finding out, but being able to recognize, that's something in my role as an individual development coach I've been able to do, because something I thought about quite a lot, and I actually put together, I have some quite strong thoughts on this. The role, a word I haven't used yet, is intentional. We should be intentional in what we do. Obviously, everybody's role and responsibility, I'm fortunate, like I said earlier, we have a head coach, we have an assistant coach, we have myself, we have a goalkeeping coach. But if you take the head coach and the assistant coach and myself, an individual development coach, our role is very different. Our professional balance is very different. And how we build relationships with those players is very different. It has to be. Because a head coach needs to build fairness, right? He can't be everyone's friend, right? Just as an example, can't be everybody's friend. Has to build trust by fairness. That doesn't mean people can't disagree with him, but they have to understand that the head coach, he or she, is fair. Mm. As an individual development coach, I'm completely different. I don't need to build fairness. I can work with them one-to-one. And like I said, I've thought a lot about this. I have quite a few notes on this that... being intentional in your role, but keeping your professional balance, is a skill set a lot of coaches need to work on.
And I think there's a few different bits, and I've seen this firsthand, both, you know, being in a similar role to kind of how you've explained yours to be, in that actually, you're right, head coach needs to be fair, but also the players, whether they're openly going to admit it or not, they probably don't always let their guard down or allow them to be themselves in front of the head coach. Because ultimately, there's a consequential factor there, right? Oh, you might not pick me, or you might drop me, or I might not get signed, or whatever that might be. Where I guess in the role that you're, you know, the role function that you're playing, well, you're there for them. But coming back to what you're saying, it's still an element of professionalism, right? Because you still got allegiances to the overarching project of the head coach. I think there's that recognition that. Goes back to my key analogy, right? You don't have to unlock every door in the environment. And you know, we hear stories all the time about players in environments where actually it's not even the coach they've got a really good relationship with. It might be the physio, it might be the kit man, it might be the therapist, it might be whoever, it might be the kitchen porter, I don't know, whoever might be in the environment, right? And I think ultimately, is it an environment where the players feel like they can connect with anyone? Not because they're being forced to, not because the coach is I guess bullying them into building a connection, if you like, but actually no, there's just organic opportunities to connect.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And knowing how, even like body language, for example, a head coach, when you think about them trying to keep fairness but keeping the respect, right, they want to be approachable, but they have to keep the professional distance, right? So they model consistency, right, by their mood, by their body language. That sets the tone, right? Attitude is a reflection of leadership. So if they're going into a training session, or they're around the training ground, or they're turning up to training and they're using foul language and they're not dressed appropriately, it rubs off. An assistant coach, for example, they want to be approachable. They can smile a lot more than a head coach can. We know that, right? An assistant coach can, because we want the assistant coach to be the bridge between the players and obviously the head coach. And if you do that right, if you get that piece as an assistant coach perfect or even close to perfect, what happens is you get trust and the trust becomes strong and you get messages flowing both ways. So not only then is the assistant coach translating what the head coach is trying to get across, right, way that is understandable for the players, but what you also then get is the players then go to the assistant coach. And obviously you make a good point. The assistant coach can never undermine their head coach, right? It can never undermine them. But they must support the message of the players and they need to relay that constructively to the coaching staff. So you then get messages flowing both ways. So then take that away, my role as individual development coach, players are opening up about all sorts of things. And like you said earlier, in regards to they might have a bad session or a bad week because of something happening outside. That's probably happened to me in the last 12 months, 10 times. 10 times I've had a player come to me with a serious situation, I got a puncture on my bike, right? Not that type of, like serious stuff that is life-changing to them sometimes. And understanding that and seeing that and being able to speak to them is great because then I then can relay that message to the rest of the coaching staff. So when you talk about elite level, if we don't have an individual development coach, are those messages getting to the assistant coach and the head coach in a high level environment?
I think you're spot on. I think, you know, in essence, what we're saying is that although it's not necessary to have the individual development coach per se, but it does create a more organic and natural opportunity for that information to be filtered through. And I guess one of the things that you touched on a few moments ago is life changing for them, right? And because it ultimately subjective, right? Like you might be looking at that situation thinking, what are you on about? That's not that deep. But actually for that person it is. Right. And I think it's just recognizing that piece and almost, you know, like you said, having the player's corner, but also recognizing that you've got a duty to the overarching, you know, the organization, so to speak, because, you know, at the end of the day, that's your employer, right? But ultimately you're there for the players too. So it's recognizing that fine balance and that professional judgment to make a decision as to when does it need to go this way? When does it need to go that way? And I think there's so much nuance in there in terms of variables to consider around how to do the role effectively. But ultimately, just it goes round circle, full circle back to the idea behind everything. We're here to help people.
Yeah, but why?
110%. Kurt, it's been a real pleasure. I'm just conscious of time, but I just want to know from yourself, is there any final messages that you'd want to kind of share with any coaches listening to this?
Yeah, I mean, for me, when I started to really think about the learner, I know I've mentioned it a couple of times, thinking about the learner first and the why, it really changed how I planned sessions and planned my interactions within the session. Because, for example, we could have a player who we know needs to be better at this, needs to be better at that. But when we actually start thinking about actually, where are they right now mentally? What has been their experience this week? What has been their experience this season? We start thinking about them and not, I need you to do this because this is what the game demands, right? This is how we get you to be better. So the overriding arch out of all of it, really, for me, is relationships. Everything is about relationships. And from that, to be intentional and have impact. And once we can start realizing that, I can know everything about football, but if I don't know how little Jimmy learns on a football pitch, then it doesn't mean anything. And if he doesn't trust me, then what difference does it make?
That's a great point. That's a great point. And I think I guess the final question for me to you really is, you know, I think we spoke off the top, right before we started recording off air, if you like, around the rationale and the reason why I have these conversations, because I think there's not enough opportunities to have these conversations with coaches from across the board. We might be having them internally if we do. But these conversations for me are about learning and development for us as individuals, as well as sharing ideas and thoughts. So, you know, I'm curious to know what's been your most useful kind of takeaway or reflection point within the conversation itself.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, at the start of the call, you and I had a great chat about how we need to drop the barriers Like, nobody has a magic potion. Like, I mean, Pep Guardiola talks things that we understand. How many times have you heard Pep Guardiola or Mikel Arteta in an interview and you're like, it's that simple? Like, it's really that simple. Like, nobody has a magic potion here. It's just about doing it consistently. And something you and I have spoke about before the call and after this is that, like, being prepared to be open-minded and just go into it and always come back to the why on it. So I really appreciate, yes, you. As I said earlier, I've listened to a lot of your podcast. You're doing a great job, and definitely been an absolute pleasure to be on your podcast today, pal.
I appreciate that, Kurt, man. Really appreciate your time. And again, some of the insights you shared today really resonated with me, and hopefully for the coaches listening to this as well. So I thank you again for your time and your participation, man. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.